We're in a golden age of animal tracking. But somehow, the more we discover, the more mysterious animal migration seems. David Barry has traveled around the world, from the Australian desert to the South African bush, studying the superstars of animal migration, the species he calls super navigators. You'd be surprised how many tiny creatures have navigational skills we can only dream of.
The monarch butterfly, like a lot of other insects, and indeed other animals besides insects, has what's called a time-compensated sun compass, which sounds complicated, but it's quite simple. The insect can detect the position of the sun in the sky and can use that to maintain a steady course. Now, because the sun is constantly moving across the sky, it needs to compensate for that movement. So it actually also has an internal clock that enables it to make an allowance to compensate for the changing azimuth of the sun and keep flying straight in a broadly southwesterly direction.
Wow, so it's really got a tool, almost a tool inside its brain that we don't have, which computes both time and light.
And angle.
Simultaneously.
A remarkable thing for a creature so small, with a brain the size of, well, not even a grain of rice. It's a tiny brain with only a few hundred thousand neurons in it.
But you know, reading your book, that's what comes up over and over again. Some of the tiniest creatures on the planet have some of the most remarkable navigational abilities. Like the dung beetle was discovered fairly recently. They navigate by the light of the Milky Way.
That's right. And they're not the only ones. The nocturnal dung beetle is a truly fascinating insect. And, well, I should explain that what dung beetles do is they find a pile of dung and they go to the dung and they collect a piece of it and they turn it into a beautiful little sphere. And then using their rear legs, they roll this sphere away from the pile of dung to their nest where they can feed on it and lay eggs in it and what have you. And it's very important that they get away from the pile of dung as quickly as possible because other dung beetles otherwise will mug them and take the ball of dung off them. And to go as quickly as possible, you need to go in a straight line. You don't want to go curving around and coming back to where you started. So they have to go straight. And the way they do that is they tend to use the light of the moon.
What if there's no moon?
Ah, well, exactly. There's Eric Warrant, whom I interviewed for the book, told me a funny story. He said that they'd published the results about polarized moonlight navigation. And then a while later, they were out in the desert in South Africa doing some more research. And they were sitting around their kind of campfire having a beer. And the moon hadn't yet risen. So they thought they couldn't really do anything. And they'd laid out some dung. And then they noticed that the dung beetles were beginning to fly in. They were drawn by the smell of the dung and they were landing. And the moon hadn't risen, but they were rolling balls of dung away. And Eric and his colleague, Marie, were really quite alarmed because they suddenly thought, maybe
we got it wrong.
Maybe we don't need the moon. So then they basically looked up at the brilliantly dark night sky out on the edge of the Kalahari Desert, no light pollution, just this amazing, brilliant starlit sky. And they noticed, of course, the band of the Milky Way, hidden from most of us city dwellers, of course. They looked at each other and they said, maybe, is it possible? Could they maybe actually be using the Milky Way? And they then proceeded to perform some absolutely delightful experiments. First of all, they put some little cardboard hats on the beetles, which prevented the beetles actually seeing the night sky. And sure enough, they couldn't steer straight.
Aww.
And then they thought, well, we'd better make another experiment to see whether it's just having a hat on that upsets them. So they made transparent hats. And when the hats were transparent, they could navigate again.
There's one thing I don't understand. One of the things that always seems most mysterious to me is how many animals migrate with incredible precision to a very particular destination without ever having been there or been shown where or how to go. Like sea turtles.
Yeah.
They'll hatch from eggs. There are no parents anywhere around. Nobody is going to lead them. And they swim off to the exact right island.
Yes, it is absolutely astonishing. And what we do know is that loggerhead turtles that hatch on the coast of Florida, they are definitely the most impressive magnetic navigators because the tiny little hatchlings, they perform an extraordinary journey. They get caught up in the north flowing Gulf Stream, and then they are taken right the way around the entire North Atlantic Ocean using ocean currents. But in order to do that, they need to know which way they're facing. And Ken Lohman at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill has done wonderful experiments, which are now really part of the bedrock of animal navigation science, in which he took little hatchling turtles and altered the magnetic field around them, and he could make these little hatchlings head in different directions. And the directions in which they head seem to be, as it were, designed to enable the hatchlings to stay safely inside the current, which will bring them back to their home beaches.
It strikes me that there are a couple of reactions I have. One is to marvel at humans' ability to figure all of this out. That's extraordinary science. But the other is to really see all of this as a story about perhaps the beginning of the decline of the myth of human exceptionalism. It seems like the story that's emerging is a paradigm of animals as being not only not inferior to us, but in some ways superior.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a really important lesson that one can learn. And animal navigation studies are certainly a wonderful window onto the amazing abilities of other species. Because to be honest, although human beings are obviously brilliant in some ways, and we've developed tools that enable us to navigate with amazing precision, notably, of course, GPS, our natural navigational abilities, unless specially cultivated, are really nothing compared to the sort of things that we've been discussing. Indigenous peoples, however, are capable of some truly astonishing feats. So if you look at the Inuit hunters of northern Canada or the Aboriginal tribespeople of the desert regions of Australia, or, of course, Polynesian islanders, all of these indigenous peoples have truly astonishing navigational abilities, and they don't make use of maps, compasses, or indeed tools of any kind. It's all based on their senses and their natural wits.
What's an example of the way the Inuit or Pacific Islanders, what can they do that we GPS-addled brains can't?
Well, they are. Let me talk a little bit about the Pacific Islanders. The navigational specialists, because they're specially trained and selected, start at a very early age, and they are taught the precise positions on the horizon at which 32 named stars rise and set every night. And they can use those stars to maintain a steady course in any direction they choose. So that's the star compass. On top of that, however, out on the open ocean, they can also use patterns of swell. So swell is a waveform that is not produced by local winds, but it's generated by storms, often hundreds or even thousands of miles away. And these swells follow very, very regular courses across the ocean. So these navigators use the patterns of swell also as a kind of compass. They can detect the swells and they can steer by them. More remarkable, though, still, when they get close to an island target, which may be completely invisible because it's low-lying, they can also pick up the reflections of the waves from that island, and they can work out from those the direction in which to sail to get to the island.
Wow. So to make clear, this is, imagine if they would be standing on the beach of one particular island, just looking out at what to us would be just an empty, flat horizon of ocean.
Yes.
But that's not what they see.
No. And indeed, they see the ocean as being their home. But let me give this a bit of context, because I'm not talking about little journeys of 10, 20, or even 100 miles. I'm talking about journeys of, in some cases, of thousands of miles.
Wow.
And indeed, the Polynesian Voyaging Society, which was set up in the 1970s to develop these skills and sustain them, has conducted some extraordinary voyages using these traditional techniques, not just around the Pacific, but around the world. So it's a happy thing that in Polynesia, at least, these traditional indigenous skills, truly remarkable cultural artifacts that date back for thousands of years, have been not only recovered, but preserved. I'm afraid, though, that the same is not necessarily true elsewhere. And I think there are real concerns about what will happen to the equally impressive expertise of the Inuit that I mentioned, and indeed Australian Aboriginal tribes too, and many others. These are precious heirlooms of our human ancestry, and for them to be lost just because it's more convenient to press a button on a gadget would be tragic.
That's David Barry. His book is called Super Navigators, Exploring the Wonders of How Animals Find Their Way.